Welcome to Biohacking with Brittany. I am so excited that you are joining today. This is a very special episode because we are diving into everything women's health and photobiomodulation and red light therapy. And it's even more special because we are dedicating this to all of the mothers out there, the current mothers, the mothers to be, women trying to get pregnant, everything like that. And this year, I actually am pregnant. So it's kind of my first unofficial Mother's Day, which is really interesting. I'm just really excited about this topic because there is so much to say about using alternative healing methods like photobiomodulation for women's health that we really are not speaking to enough. And there's not enough research out there about it. So I am joined by Forrest Smith. He is the founder and CEO of Kineon Labs. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Brittany. It's always awesome to see you.
Yeah. I'm excited that you're here. So for everyone watching who can see this, back when I was trying to optimize my fertility and preconception prior to conceiving, I was using red light therapy or photobiomodulation as one of my practices. And so what I would do is I would take their device, as you can see it here on the camera, and I would actually pop out their little lights like this, which is so handy. And I'm wearing a dress today, but I would like roll down my pants and I would put these right on my ovaries. And I would do 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes a day to really support the ovarian function and the mitochondria function that is happening at that level. So it's actually interesting. The ovaries have the most mitochondria dense cells in both men and women. And so when I started looking into that and started realizing the role that this type of light therapy can have on mitochondria, I started kind of doing that practice. So that's just kind of like how I started getting into this. And then obviously we were successful with getting pregnant. And so I really do attribute part of that to using a modality like this. Anyway, Forrest, welcome.
Thank you so much. I have to say, first of all, congratulations. That's such an exciting step forward in life. And I'm so excited for you and can't wait to see the kind of journey you have through this. It's going to be awesome. And I've got a few notes today from ourselves and our research team on different ways that hopefully we can support you with that from a technology and a health and wellness standpoint. So super excited to talk to you about some of these data points. We've got our nerd team hard at work here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I really wanted to have you on the show is, even though I used it as a practice, I really want to understand and be able to help other people understand the data behind using this for things like fertility. So I'd kind of love to start there. What have you seen in the research and in the studies that has really been able to help women in this specific space?
It's amazing, actually. I just wanted to take one moment to say that my research here and myself spend tens of thousands of hours in this space, and it's the numbers that we see here are amazing, but the numbers of studies are kind of 1 to 100 compared to things like erectile dysfunction and male fertility. And we just wanted to bring a little bit of attention to that with your listeners that this is something where education around this is super, super important. And the differences aren't small. So when we look at fertility, I'm just going to give you a few, hopefully you don't mind me looking down for my numbers to refer to these and be as accurate as possible. But we see amazing differences. And it's very shocking that there's not more education about this, because even with us researching this space, tens of thousands of hours, this was relatively new for us. So with fertility, one of the big impacts is endothelial tissue growth is in double-digit increases through healthy proliferation. Endometrial receptivity is up over 300%. So this kind of the sperm attaching to the endometrial tissue there. Decrease in miscarriages by 9%. Implantation increase of 30% versus placebo. Another interesting one, which would require a little bit more on a kind of biochemical dive into, but LIF, leukemia inhibitor factor, increases by over 200%. So you see benefits to kind of avoiding cancer. You see benefits to fertility. You see healthier ovaries with much lower rates of things like polycystic ovary syndrome, ovarian syndrome, by up in the high double digits. So all of these are very, very substantial improvements over placebo relative to what you can do with photobiomodulation. And these are also, as an aside, massive increases over anything pharmaceuticals. So, and the pharmaceuticals come with some typically bad side effects and impacts on the physiology that we'd like to avoid. But it's as we find these type of huge impacts, it becomes obvious how much education needs to be done in this space. Because again, if we're in the space and this numbers are new to us, we can't expect the rest of the population to really be adopting technology that they don't understand the benefits of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think it's easy to kind of want to just take a pharmaceutical standpoint and trust that. But it's important with people like you and companies like yours to show that, hey, there actually is another way that we can go about this. And there is another way that we can decrease your chance of miscarriage. And those types of things are really important. And as I'm sure you're aware, miscarriages are increasing, infertility is increasing. It now impacts 1 in 6 couples. And that's pretty shocking, right? So it wasn't always like that. I think it was about 1 in 8 couples about 10, 15 years ago. So things are sadly kind of getting worse in that space. And a lot of people are really struggling with it because it's such a sensitive, personal, emotional thing and journey for men and for women. So I'm glad that you're offering options that are outside of the norm. So if someone is listening to this and maybe that's the struggle that they're kind of going through right now, how would you explain how it actually works on a cellular level? Like, is it because of the inflammation? Is it the mitochondria? Like, what is it about this device when you're using it on your ovaries that makes that difference for fertility?
The biggest two things are the increase in energy production, which downstream, so you start that mitochondrial production of ATP. One of the downstream signaling things for this that triggers is the balancing in oxidative stress. And so oxidative stress can be put out of line by a number of different things. So if you're in a toxic environment around toxic chemicals, if you're not sleeping enough, if you are have too much stress, there's a number of things that can put your oxidative stress levels out of order, and this helps pull them back into line. But the main thing that we really talk about and harp on most is inflammation. And I think one of the things that's certainly was new to me finding out about this is not only is this tissue very mitochondria rich, it's also uterine tissue is the most inflamed to an extreme level to where it impacts brain chemistry from the ache and chronic inflammation on a regular basis. So, menstrual pain and inflammation really has a really strong foundation based around the inflammation that's there. And so one of the things that we impact with that is reduced things like the markers that we measure and that the medical community measures around inflammation in this area that are most meaningful are TNF-alpha, a number of different interleukin inflammation markers, interleukin 6 is being one of the ones that's easier and more commonly measured. But we see massive changes in these inflammation kind of markers. And that is really what drives a lot of the pain reduction as well. We see, for example, prostaglandin E2, PGE2, the reduction in this is substantial. And it's the same type of thing that you see for, athletes who have repetitive stress injuries. Achilles tendonitis is something that comes to mind from some recent studies. When that PGE2 drops, that tissue gets healthier and people are in substantially less pain. And we found the same thing with endometriosis as an example. There's a heavy level of inflammation there. And when we're able to decrease that inflammation, we see a 45% decrease in pain on a visual assessment score. So that's going from essentially an 8 to just above a 4 on a 0 to 10 scale, which is really powerful change for someone. And it kind of takes them out of a state where they're not really able to do anything because of the pain level, to where they may be in pain, but they're still functioning, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And endometriosis and PCOS are linked to infertility in different ways, right? And it makes it very complicated when you have an underlying health condition like that, because you kind of have to actually heal that condition before you just try to heal fertility, right? So you have to kind of peel back the layers. And when I was looking at endometriosis and doing some research, I was shocked to see how many women are actually struggling with this. It's about 11%, which equates to about 190 million women of reproductive age worldwide. That's a lot of women. That's a huge amount. And to think, okay, why is this happening? What can we do about it? But also to think like, cool, like I can buy this device that can help actually reduce the inflammation that is showing up in my uterus, which is part of the cause of endometriosis in the first place, is just very, very inspiring. So I'm curious if your research has shown specifically with endometriosis, if there is something or a link there between photobiomodulation helping with that and kind of reducing that condition.
Absolutely. So this is the one where I just have to take one moment to tell an anecdote as to how we came onto endometriosis in the first place. We have a friend who's a founder of a startup, kind of like I am. They make sensor products for measuring nitric oxide in the blood. And we send our products back and forth for kind of tech geek out type things. And so he's kind of one of our Move Pluses, but his wife suffers from endometriosis very heavily and was at regularly unable to kind of do anything for 2 to 3 days at a time because, a number of people who suffer from endometriosis, a large percentage actually, are non-responsive to drugs. So they can take NSAIDs, pain level is not going to change at all. And she was unfortunately in that category. And one of the things he knew about it from the research we had been discussing was that the decrease in inflammation. So endometriosis is a very inflammation heavy pathology. And he knew that we were able to decrease inflammation with photobiomodulation. And so his thought was, try this and, maybe you can go from an 8 to a 6. And what we found with her was that she went from an 8 to a 0 and on the pain scale in 30 minutes. And wow. That's not a typical response. The typical response really going from an 8 to about a 3 or a 4. So you still see massive changes. But this really triggered us to come back and say, why, if we're seeing responses like this, why isn't this the gold standard treatment for it? And I think one of the main reasons is, what we noted before, the amount of money going into research from a medical standpoint for female pathologies relative to male pathologies is a small fraction. And it's very unfortunate, but, that really kind of lit a flame in our team to be able to dig further into this and understand why is this, triggering such a good response and why don't we have education out there telling people that they can actually treat this without taking drugs that are likely going to be ineffective for them anyway. And they can recapture days at a time of their lives by, not being in such heavy pain that they can't get out of bed. And so again, we've seen in the literature, 45 to 55% decreases on average in endometriosis. There's benefits to brain chemistry because of this. Your body, your brain does not like being in long-term chronic pain. And so there's different parts of your brain, that have difficulty from a neurotransmitter standpoint. Yeah, there's impacts almost systemically from inflammation, and it's one of the things that we see with other parts of the body as well. That inflammation doesn't stay static; it's dynamic and moves throughout the body. And wherever it does go, this chronic inflammation, it will cause some level of disruption, and oftentimes that's brain or cardiovascular tissue. But in this case, because it's so mitochondria dense and because it's so heavily inflamed, the tissue. It really responds particularly well to the photobiomodulation. And so we're kind of now trying to build up a better education process for getting this out to people and letting them try for themselves, because it's a really powerful tool. One of our missions as a company is to increase the quality of life for the largest number of people we can in the most measurable way we can. And unfortunately for pain, that's usually on a subjective 0 to 10 scale. But it's still meaningful. I think taking, when you see these kind of 50% decreases in pain, that's a very meaningful impact for somebody's quality of life. So we feel like it's a very good place for us to come out and really appreciate the time that you're taking today and really that you always do with educating your listeners about the science behind what can change their body in a healthy way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so important I was reading that I think it's about 30 to 50% of women with endometriosis have this chronic pain that you're talking about, which is quite a significant amount of them. And that chronic pain is debilitating, right? So that impacts your life, that impacts how you show up for your kids if you have them, or your family, or your work, or your school. It impacts like if you can work out and be active. It's just, it has such ripple effects. And I know because I've had some pain during, you know, my menstrual cycles and that type of thing. And I could only imagine what that would feel like day in and day out to have chronic pain like that, and to try to lead a normal life and get all of these things done all the time, and then just be achy throughout my body. Like that would be really difficult. So I would love to give some actionable insights for the women listening who are kind of struggling with this. How often do you think that they should be doing this photobiomodulation for endometriosis? How much time? How many times a week? Like what kind of have you seen?
So what we've seen most successful is two times at 15 minutes per time per day. So morning and evening. And I think what we found actually is very interesting. It's the same thing I find with my pain points. I've got, as an example, an old torn meniscus in my knee that flares up. And when I have pain in it, I treat it every day. I should be treating it every day anyway, because that helps the soft tissue repair and grow in a healthier way. But I think we're all busy and you know, it can fall off the radar when you don't have something triggering it from an inflammation or pain standpoint. So when it's flaring up, it's easy to remember, but it would also be good to say, if we can get people to build habits. So stack this with a habit like your morning coffee, or even less healthy habits. Like I watch Netflix every night just to kind of chill out with my kids and wife. So, you know, just build in something that you're going to do every day pragmatically. And you don't need to do it for two times per day when you're not flaring up. But the tissue health kind of benefits to the female reproductive system are very clear. And eating for 15 minutes a day is a powerful way to keep yourself healthy, reduce chance of cervical cancer by high double digits. There's a number of different impacts. So really, there's no downside. There's no kind of poor internal byproducts like there are with drugs. And so we'd really love to see people using it as consistently and kind of on a daily basis as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of the healthy habits that I recommend and people recommend, they really are much more effective when they compound, right? When you actually are doing them day in and day out. And so it's like you're talking about, like, how do we set up our environment to be able to do that and have that habit stacking? So when I was doing it for fertility, I kept your device on my desk at home. Like I work from home. And so I would just see it. And then I'm sitting working at my desk. So I might as well just take it, put it on, and there you go. And I'm done. Right? It's so easy. It doesn't have to be like plugged in or anything. It's just so mobile. So it was really easy. And I think another way that you could do it, especially if you don't work from home, is to have it actually on your nightstand. So if you kind of like read at night or when you're winding down, again, like just have it right there, grab it, use it, put it on, and then put it back. Even just to start maybe once a day, something like that, I think would be effective.
Yeah, perfect. Once a day, it's going to make a massive difference. And if you can do it for 15 minutes once a day, the outcomes are unequivocal. There's a huge difference in the health for the fertility kind of reproductive system for men and women. But I think because of the kind of endemic inflammation for menstrual cycle, it's even better benefits for women than it is for men.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I'd love to talk about pregnancy a bit now, like moving into that space as somebody who is pregnant and who has had many friends who've been pregnant. It's interesting to see how everyone's journey is so different. And there's so many different symptoms you can have. But I think a lot of women do have this pain that can come in their joints, in their muscles. A lot of women report back pain. I think I was reading it's about like 50% of women report back pain at some time during their pregnancy. And it makes sense, right? Like your center of gravity is off. You're carrying this weight all in the front of you. You know, you're walking different. You're sleeping different, all these things. So how does photobiomodulation kind of help with pregnancy in that way? Is it mostly because of the pain reduction that it can provide?
It is mostly pain reduction, but almost all of that pain reduction, I would say, if we had to kind of hand-wavy version of it, 90% of it is related to inflammation. And one of the things that you do see with pregnancy is that, you have essentially a foreign body, almost literally a foreign body inside of you. And so inflammation can trigger more systemically. And where you see that presenting from just a day-to-day sense for it is typically in your joints. And so you see soft tissue and muscular pain at the, in the lower back from really the changes in load that you're carrying and how you're hearing it from a center of gravity. But you also see this increased systemic inflammation presenting in joint pain. And that's one where we really have done a good job of our scientific team and physiology team of designing laser therapy to be able to target internal tissue. And you'll see a lot of different red light therapy products in the market for panels and things like this. And they're great for external. So increasing collagen and changing skin level or surface level, shallow tissue changes are very powerful. But what we've focused on, because it's really in line with our mission as a company to make these quality of life changes, is internal tissue. So treating inflammation, treating pain that's within the body. And for pregnancy, where we see this present a lot is feet, knees, hands actually as well. We try to set reasonable expectations. Feet and knees, from a tissue standpoint, there's more tissue in these areas. And so you see responses to the light therapy a little bit faster. The hands take a little bit longer, but it still does work. So from a time scale, you're looking at, days to weeks for the areas that have more tissue, and weeks to kind of low months for areas like hands, where you just don't have as much tissue for us to interact with.
Introducing Glycan Age, the ultimate biological age test that helps you discover, measure, and optimize your health. With Glycan Age, understanding your body has never been simpler or more scientific. Glycan Age is more than just a number. It's a comprehensive analysis of your biological age determined by measuring chronic inflammation in your system, a direct result of your lifestyle choices. The test, which is backed by over 30 years of scientific research and validated by over 200,000 tests, gives you insights published in world-renowned medical journals. Getting started is super easy. The at-home test includes everything you need. Simply collect your sample and send it right back. And in just 3 weeks, the lab will analyze your sample and generate a detailed report on your biological age. They don't just stop there, though. Each Glycan Age test includes a free consultation with one of their experts. They'll help you understand your results and suggest lifestyle changes to enhance your health and longevity. Glycan Age is unique. It responds to lifestyle interventions, unlike other aging clocks. Whether it's through caloric restriction or weight loss or any other healthy habit you might bring in, there are studies that show that these beneficial health changes really can make a difference in your glycan aging. Are you ready to take control of your health? You can use my code BiohackingBrittany at checkout for a 15% off discount on your Glycan Age test. Discover your true biological age with Glycan Age and start optimizing your life today. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Is it safe to use by your uterus and ovaries when you're pregnant and like the baby's there? Or is it something that you would not want to use like once you're pregnant in the front of your body?
There's no contraindications for it. So we're not dosing in a way that would be dangerous around there. We haven't, if you have pain or inflammation in that area, definitely go ahead and treat. What we the best kind of bang for their buck out of those is the joints and again, joints and then appendages, the feet and hands and peripheral tissue really takes a beating from the inflammation during pregnancy and can be very sore and swollen. And I think what we've heard back from our users about this is the changes for that are very fast and very effective.
Nice. Oh, that's so good to know. I actually didn't even think about that. My feet are still the same size right now, but I've noticed my hands, like with my Aura ring and stuff, it's harder to get my rings off. So, and I think it might get worse, but maybe photobiomodulation is a good idea to kind of reduce the swelling. I would never have thought to use it in that way.
Absolutely. I love the kind of biohacking approach you take to everything. you know, let's make sure that you know, with this, we're doing no harm, kind of to the medical standard. And then let's go try these out. And again, it's been very great for us to have a number of our users. My partner and I, it's our first direct consumer brand. So we really want to spend time with our users and understand, you know, in line with our mission, we're not really here to sell products. And so if we're not delivering what they want with a pain reduction or inflammation reduction, we need to know. So we've put our calendars out there for our users to book and call with us. And we spend a lot of time talking to people through what their experiences are with this. And again, one nice, and I know a lot of this from a scientific standpoint, it's anecdotal. But again, with stories like our friend's wife with endometriosis, when you see somebody go from an 8 to a 0 on a pain scale, it just triggers like green flags. You're like, there's something here. Let's dig into it and make sure that if the science is there, which it is, you know, how can we take it forward? And if it's not there, how can we go create this with our own medical trials? And that's one of the things that we've been working on with a couple of different areas, like fibromyalgia with a hospital trial we have going on in the UK, and different ways of treating pain. But it's just exciting for us to be able to understand really from a hands-on standpoint with people what their pain journey is, because, you know, if they're not getting what they want from this, we need to know, we need to fix that. But in most cases, what we're hearing is, this is working really well for me, or how can I optimize this to, or how can I add something else in with this? This is great. Are there three in a decade?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, what are the other applications of it? Like, if it works in this space, can it also work in this space as well? Which I think is very exciting, especially as we move more and more into like the women's health space. I think there's only going to be like more and more doors that are going to open that we realize. I'm just glad that you guys are in this space doing the research, learning from your customers, because I think it's really important. I would love to ask you about postpartum. Obviously, birth is a massive event in a woman's life. Her body, her mind, everything goes through massive changes. And coming back from that and healing from that can take some women years. Like, the uterus itself can take years to kind of get back to a place of being less inflamed. So have you seen anything that shows how this can really support healing the uterus and the ovaries and after birth, whether it's, well, I guess maybe not a C-section, but vaginal? Like, what have you seen? What does the data show for this time in a woman's life?
Biomodulation is one of the first things that was flagged for this as a general technology. And most of what you see this tested on is things like cuts, kind of superficial cuts on the arms. But what we're seeing this with now, there's very good literature I can send you through on this if you'd like to distribute it, is high double digits, so mid double digits. I want to say, I'll have to look back at it. I don't have that specifically in front of me, but somewhere around the 40 percentile range for increased speed of wound healing for post-pregnancy. So uterine, and then so one of the ones they've measured that it's easier to measure because it's external tissue is C-section healing. And there's a massive and substantial difference between how healthy the tissue is and how small the scar is. The scar tissue is much healthier and much smaller when you're able to do this, and it heals faster to get to that. So I think we're looking at something like a 50% difference on the and again, we'll send you through the papers and the actual percentages after the discussion, but something like a 60% rate of increase in healing for cesarean section, and then something like a 30 to 40% smaller scar from a width of the scar. And the scar tissue also becomes more supple and more similar to regular skin. And there's a number of reasons for this increase in fibroblast proliferation, increase in extracellular matrix proliferation. And I think type 2 collagen, actually a couple of different types of collagen proliferate faster when you're treating them with lasers. But because of that, you end up with just healthier scar tissue that's more integrated with the rest of your body and doesn't stand out as much, both from a color and from a tissue kind of pliability standpoint. But with the uterine also, that's another one where, again, just healthy, you get healthier tissue faster by treating and dosing that internal tissue. And that has less, that has smaller studies behind it, but the studies are also very, very clear and unequivocal on the recovery times being.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so smart, especially with the C-sections. I've had a couple of friends who've had C-sections, and you can tell when you talk to them about it, how kind of like sensitive they are about it, or they're sensitive about the scarring, the birth itself, for sure. But even just the way that their body kind of now shows and the scars that it can leave, unfortunately. So if someone's listening to this and maybe they had a C-section, let's say like 2 years ago, is it too late now for them to start using a therapy like this? Or do you think it could still kind of help with the appearance of those scars and the scar tissue there?
It's not too late. It's too late for it to do it the faster way, because your scars grow back. But what you have to wait for at that point in time is for that scar tissue to die off and regenerate. And so instead of being on a week scale, you're on a month scale. But you do still promote healthier scar tissue. So it's absolutely still worth doing. You just have to have a little bit of patience with it.
Good. Okay, good. That's really encouraging. I'm glad. And then I was also thinking about this during this like postpartum time, where a lot of women are dealing with things like stretch marks and, you know, whether on their stomach or their breasts from breastfeeding, that type of thing. Would it help with that, like more superficial marks that show up on the skin? Or does it just penetrate like right past that and not really work in that way?
So we actually do include a 660 nanometer red, which penetrates essentially towards that more superficial tissue. And what you'd like to see people doing is treating these areas as they are getting towards dissension as part of the pregnancy, and then treating them as they're coming, kind of recovering back after the pregnancy. So both during and after will both have positive impacts.
Nice. Okay. That's good to know. I don't have any scars right now or stretch marks, but you never know. I still have a while to go. So I will definitely keep that in mind. I think I need to make a list of all the different ways that I can use this for my pregnancy and postpartum, because it's just so encouraging that it can help with so many things. Like, it's just, yeah, it's great.
It's actually one of the things that just, so Erin, our research lead, has just showed me a cutoff for a paper for, was postpartum pain reduction. The intensity of pain reduced substantially from postpartum. And I believe there's something in there as well. Not in that paper, but in that one we've seen about reducing postpartum depression as well. So if you can give us a couple of days, we'll pull you together some of the graphs and key data out of this. So again, if your listeners would like to be able to kind of download this and take a look into the data, it's very powerful. Again, none of these are really kind of on the edge, and these are double-blinded randomized controlled trials. And it's so there's not placebo effect. They kind of solved that. It's really seeing, you know, high double digit changes in pain, which I think one of the things that we've been into with kind of the uterine lining particularly is the inflammation and high mitochondrial density in the area, both of which are things that we interact with very very powerfully.
Nice. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'd love to like see that, and you can send it to me and I can put it in the show notes and link it for people, so that they can read it as well. As part of my audience, I actually have a substantial amount of women who are listening who are in the menopause phase of their life. And menopause, for those who don't know, typically happens around age 51 for the average American. And I'm always encouraged when these women reach out to me and say, like, I listen to you while I'm in my sauna and I'm going through menopause, and what do you recommend about this and that? And It's just really nice to hear from that demographic. So, you know, for those women who are at that stage in life right now, how does this play into that? You know, maybe they've had kids, but maybe they haven't, and they're still going through menopause. Like, what can we really say here?
So there's a few things that we can impact with this. One is genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And so we're seeing an improved endothelial cardiovascular tissue, the lamina propria restructure that this can cause, vascularization, increased vascularization of endothelial tissue, and healing the extracellular matrix, all of which have been impacted by menopause. And then two of the other ones that are probably a little bit less science sounding, but I think from an experiential standpoint would be interesting, are reduced hot flashes. And so there's a very, very long kind of chemical signaling pathway to describe as to why, but I think the kind of takeaway is reduced hot flashes is something that we impact as well, and improved vaginal dryness. So 29% increase in vaginal lubrication and moisture, which is a very recent and very thorough study that we've pulled up as well. So these are a few of the different symptoms of menopause that are actually impacted directly. And again, for us, the main thing is these are things that can impact people's quality of life. So how can we build them a protocol? How can we dive back behind the science and give them a way to be able to prove this?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So for the women in this menopause phase, when they're using your device, are they still using it on the ovaries? Like, is that the place that you would recommend for them to get the impact on hot flashes and vaginal dryness? Or like, I guess, where else would they use it?
Yeah, so ovaries, and then essentially over the uterus. And we're the devices we make, we spend a lot of time dosing mathematical models for how light distributes through tissue. And there are different photoacceptors that we target in different depths of tissue. And so there would be two different positions, and I can send you the diagrams for these relative to menopause, that we would suggest doing 10 minutes each versus the 15 minutes that we've been kind of recommending twice a day for endometriosis, as an example. So slightly different protocols, but in slightly different positioning to achieve the optimal dosing. But it's just good to see kind of a non-pharmaceutical solution really providing benefits to this. And again, you know, hopefully we're taking a step today and educating people on what they can do to be able to create and maintain healthier tissue in their reproductive system.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. A question I used to get, I think people are a bit more educated about it now, but with photobiomodulation in general, it works in a localized manner. So if you're using it on your ovaries and uterus, like, that is where you're going to get the benefits. Unless, correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't necessarily like move throughout the body and work in all these other different places, right? So that's why there's so many devices out there that are like for your face, for your neck, like for your joints and everything like that, because it doesn't work in a systemic way, I guess.
That's right. I think the one exception to that is there's new research going into what they call remote photobiomodulation. And so one of the things that triggered this is early research into treating gut tissue. And what they find from that is your gut is at the middle of a number of different axes. And one of the most famous ones is kind of the gut-brain axis. And so, you know, one of the outcomes for treating your gut with photobiomodulation is increased dopamine signal in your brain. And that's mediated through your vagus nerve, which is great. There's two places I treat daily, which is my lower back and my gut. And then again, my knee, when it flares up, I have the pain there and I remember about it. But if you're treating your gut on a regular basis, you will see increased dopamine signaling. And it's, you know, on a kind of scientific research standpoint, that's being used to address a number of things like different types of dementia that are kind of Parkinson's, as an example, is a decreased rate of dopamine production in your brain. And it has a lot of really negative downstream impacts. But this can mute the Parkinson's because of the, but just for if you are healthy, you just actually feel a little bit better on a daily basis. It's a really nice kind of quality of life bump up as a treatment impact by treating your gut. What you've said is exactly right. There's typically you can treat the local tissue as much as possible, but there are these special parts of your body like your gut that just tie back into. There's actually a gut liver axis, and so the enzymes from your liver can be triggered in a healthier way by treating your gut as well, and it's. Because the gut is in the center of so many different signaling pathways, that there's a number of different things that it can trigger as well. So that's the one caveat to that kind of general rule.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And actually, just like discussing this now, I wonder if that actually somewhat applies to the ovaries as well, because the ovaries actually do produce hormones themselves. And when you go through menopause, you are actually seeing a massive reduction in the hormones that the ovaries produce, like estrogen and like progesterone. So I wonder if using the device there to support the ovaries would actually help balance those hormones, and then by that way, potentially reduce the symptoms that are associated with menopause. I don't know if that pathway has been like researched versus just inflammation or mitochondrial health, but if it can have a systemic event or a systemic pathway through, you know, hormones through the gut, then maybe that can apply for the ovaries as well.
No, I love it. I think that's a great idea. And we've got some homework to do. yeah. A couple of notes over here on digging back behind this, and we'll come back to your answers on that.
Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's a big problem because magnesium is involved in more than 300 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end because there's a special offer happening and this could be exactly what you need. Okay, here we go. Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you sometimes constipated? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here's what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't use or absorb. That's why I exclusively recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bioptimizer supplements are best in class, which is why I use them. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. They are so confident that they offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. Just go to bioptimizers.com/biohackingbrittany. In addition to the discount you get by using my promo code biohackingbrittany, you get gifts with your purchase. That's right. You actually get gifts. Up to 2 travel-sized bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. So act fast. This is a limited time offer. You can go to bioptimizers.com/biohackingbrittany. Use my code. It's linked in my show notes on my website and start taking your magnesium today. Yeah. Yeah. I also noticed I was going through your website today and you guys are producing blog posts on women's health now and how your product really supports that. And I think that's fabulous. And one of the other topics that you touch upon is the vaginal microbiome. And I find this very interesting. I think the microbiome in general is a very hot topic. I think gut health has been very trendy for the last 5-7 years. And now people are talking about the skin microbiome. And we're slowly starting to hear people understand the vaginal microbiome. So how does this play into that? How does it help produce healthier bacteria or balance the bacteria through light? How does that work?
So I have to say that it is early days for this, but there are a few studies for it that we can kind of refer to. But what we're going to expect is that there's going to be a very big expansion of the research in this space, very much like there has been for the gut microbiome. But a couple of things that triggers is a different balance of kind of in your gut, what's called the FB ratio, which is 2 different types of bacteria that start with these letters. And when that ratio is within a certain range, which is very similar to the kind of vaginal microbiome, when that ratio is within a certain range, you're healthy. When it's not, you have gut dysbiosis. And you'll find the same thing from a vaginal microbiome as well, is that we can impact a balance for these very effectively. And we've got a couple of papers that our research lead. Dr. Gottheit, sorry, there's I'm getting flagged from young Aaron over here, young Jake, I suppose. The nitric oxide trigger in this area actually is a big one as well. So endothelial tissue and nitric oxide, there's a big interplay there for how nitric oxide being kind of the third gas in the cardiopulmonary system of carbon dioxide, oxygen, and just very recently it's been kind of a paradigm shift to start including nitric oxide because it's one of the things that opens and dilates blood vessels that to control where you're distributing blood around your body more effectively. But it's also when you see, and this happens with age, and particularly in endothelial tissue, you see a reduction in the type of local nitric oxide here. And it's an indicator, it's a very highly correlated indicator for stiffening of endothelial tissue and kind of aid in this. And so by treating it, you essentially kind of embed more of the healthy nitric oxide in this endothelial tissue and just keep it younger.
Nice. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's important because a lot of people really struggle with things like yeast infections. And, you know, they're constantly trying to heal them, but then it disrupts the microbiome even further. I have one friend who is prone to yeast infections, as she says. And, you know, she'll take the medication or the creams. I don't even specifically know because I don't have a lot of experience with it myself. But it's interesting, again, like, how can we look at this from a different standpoint? How can we think about healing this from a holistic, natural standpoint versus taking these pharmaceuticals that are actually just disrupting the microbiome and making you worse off? I'm not sure what the statistic is for vaginal microbiome, but from what I remember with the gut microbiome is like every time you take antibiotics, it takes about 5 years to replenish to where you were before you did that one round of antibiotics. 5 years. That's wild when I think about that. So I could only imagine it probably has a similar effect for the vaginal microbiome.
Yeah, so that, I think this is one of the things that we are seeing consistent with the gut biome is that the changes that you have there can also cause increased inflammation. In the gut, it presents as leaky gut. So you start having the gut tissue kind of open and it's really unhealthy. It's kind of, if you think of kind of metabolic disorder like pre-diabetes, this is kind of like pre-irritable bowel syndrome or pre-ulcerative colitis. This is really not a good slippery slope to get into. And you see the same thing with kind of healthy balance in the vaginal pH that's impacted by this microbiome as well. And you know there is a space for different type of yeast and fungi and bacteria in both of these. But the key is that they need to be in balance, and there's kind of a balance that we can help promote with the light therapy of the vaginal wall.
Yeah, no, absolutely, that makes sense. And I've had leaky gut before, and it was rough. So, for anyone listening who's had leaky gut, it takes a long time to heal, and actually took me a long time to figure out that was the root cause of a lot of symptoms that were showing up for me, quite a long time ago, but. Yeah, it's very common. And I actually think it's more common than people think it is. And I think people are connecting it to things like diabetes, Alzheimer's, like all of these other issues as well. So there's lots of research going into that space, which is also important. But I would love for you to kind of talk about this upcoming year. What do you have planned? And what are you kind of hoping to see happen in this space for women's health as we kind of move forward?
So our team are spending a lot more time in this now that we've kind of internally flagged it as a research area that has been underserved, really from an investment and research standpoint. We're spending a lot of our internal time on how do we gather the resources that do exist and how do we take this and drive it a step forward. And so we have our gut product that we are launching in early June, and then later this summer we'll be launching a female pathology product that's. Specifically, again, one of the things that we do and we spend lots of time on is mathematical models for how this light distributes into the tissue and doses most effectively, because really the dosing is what drives the outcomes. And so that's where we are right now is we're building out these 3D models where we're kind of inserting ray traces of light into the system and saying at what level of tissue is this going to be right from a dosing standpoint for the gut. And then at what level is it going? And again, we talked about it a little bit earlier for, you know, treating ovary versus uterus versus vaginal tissue is going to be slightly different dosing. But that's what we're trying to dial in now with our physiology teams, that our product teams can dial in the actual product design to be able to deliver the correct dosage. But we will be launching a full nose specific products later this year and trying to make it as easy and as functional as we can. And we'd love to get you a device out early. You always give us great feedback on things. I think the kind of biohacker mindset that you have is really lends itself to kind of testing, identifying and testing multiple ways of user experience that, you know, it's hard for us from a kind of behind the scenes standpoint to really do. So if you don't mind, I'll just send you one over. And if there's listeners that would like to join our beta program as well, maybe we can work with you to identify them too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I bet there are. I bet there definitely are. And I just think this is so brilliant to come out with a product that is looking at everything that you're talking about, the ovaries, the uterus, the, you know, vaginal canal and the vagina on the outside. Like just even thinking about the different depths that light needs to go in order to heal is just such a new conversation that I don't see people having and I don't hear people having. So I just love that you guys are doing this so much. I think it's so needed in this space, especially as femtech and women's health continues to grow finally. And we're finally actually making products for women and not just taking the same product that we men use and just saying, oh yeah, use it as well. It's going to be fine. It's going to be just as effective. When in reality, our bodies and biology is so different that we need people like you who are really like, no, let's actually create something for women because they are different and we need to support them.
100%. Yeah, we the last thing we want to do is be a femtech tax company where we're making something pink and charging more for it. Yeah. What we're really focusing on doing is understanding that user experience. And again, we love to take your input on this and your audience's input on this, however we can, and bake it into what we're doing with it. So as we start getting towards these final prototype samples and betas that we'll be running out, I'd love to kind of stay in contact with you and see what we can do to kind of really, again, it's going to be tough for a male team to understand a female user experience without having their ears open. So hopefully, you find us a ears open and an interested group to be able to actually solve the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anyone is listening to this who wants to be a part of that beta group, like reach out to me and I will connect you. We'll figure it out so that you can try this as well, because I think that is really important. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. This is so enlightening. And I know that my audience definitely got a lot out of it. And I just really appreciate you and everything that your team is doing.
Thank you for having us. We always love spending time with you. And really, there's, you're such in such an important seat right now with the education piece that you build and bring to light for people. There's so much health that you're going to help your listeners with. I hope everyone appreciates the hard work that goes into this.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to another episode of Biohacking with Brittany. If you're interested in finding the show notes or the sponsors for this episode, you can do so on my website, which is biohackingbrittany.com. Remember to follow me on Instagram, where I'm most active. My handle is @biohackingbrittany. And if you're interested in working together and you want to email me directly, you can do that. My email is info@biohackingbrittany.com. And I look forward to hearing from you and having you tune in next week.